Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians who are figuring it out as they make their way through comedy and life and everything in between. This is your co-host, Matt Alana Martin, and with me as always, doing a little I like that. You're getting loose. Getting the shoulders loose, getting ready for a good episode. You know, don't want to come into it cold and be warmed up.
I am jazzed up. It's Dwight Simmons, by the way. I am jazzed up trying to get loose. No gym for me today, so I got a little extra energy. We'll see how long that lasts.
I was gonna say, we are you're usually a lot sweatier, but we're also doing this at a different time of day. And so we catch you come straight from the gym to do the podcast, and so you still got that glow, you know.
Yeah,
you dewy, you know, you misty, you moist.
I can get there. Okay. Give me 10 minutes. I can.
All right. Okay.
Give me 10 minutes and a topic I'm passionate about.
Okay. All right.
And I will work up a do for you. What is going on, my man? How are you?
I'm good, man. It's had a really good weekend of comedy. And today I've been working on a lot of booking stuff. Nothing super concrete has come through, but a lot of good conversations, good leads, which considering I'm working on stuff primarily that's, you know, not until next year, but it's just totally, totally cool. I'm good to just be let's just kind of feel each other out and see what's going on. You know, that's progress right there. So
it's like dating again. Mm-hmm. It's like, let's see where this goes. Let's just keep an open-ended conversation. Mm-hmm. We're not going to put each other on a pedestal yet.
Yeah. Don't compare me to your last headliner. You know,
you hear that, Arsenio? Don't compare me to your last black feature.
Oh, I found the topic. I'm going to get y'all dewy.
Oh, I'm starting to sweat already.
You know, and this is for people who've listened to every episode of the podcast. We have told that story about how you were supposed to feature for Arsenio and then you got booted from the show because he didn't want a black male feature. He wanted a non-black female feature. But I recently heard someone was reaching out asking for suggestions on headliners that could do corporate clean. Mm-hmm. And apparently, and it's for a big, big company. This was for a Toyota or something like that. It's for one of their big meetings or something. So we're talking serious payday kind of gig. Yeah. And they were adamant about it not being a white man because of something that the white male headliner said last year. And so to their credit, they're not they're not saying no more comedians ever. We'll just have a magician or, you know, a band, you know, they're we'll still do comedy, but we're not doing that.
Yeah.
Gender and race of comedian, because we're all the same, you know.
I know. It's I've been saying it for my entire comedy career. White people, white men in general. Uh-huh. I want to know who the comic is
that's what I want to know, and they would not tell me.
This corporate thing.
I don't know if the booker knew. I don't know if the booker got that information, but that is always our first question, because this last weekend when I was talking to the club owner, they were I can't remember now what they were talking about, somebody that was the weekend before or something, and the show didn't go rough. And of course I was immediately and who was here last week?
I want to know that information so bad. Yeah, we're gossip hounds.
We really are.
How do you tank a well-paying corporate job? Hey, Toyota, thanks for having me. Let's get into why we can't say the N-word. Jay-Z says it. It's right off the top.
And I listen to Jay-Z in my Toyota Prius. And so, therefore, I should be able to say it. Right? No.
Upbringing.
Yeah. I mean, those big, high-profile corporate gigs are tough anyway, because we have friends who did one of these Toyota gigs years and years and years ago. Ben Moore and I want to say it was Jesse Bush, Jesse was still in the game. Mm-hmm. He took Jesse to open for him because Ben very smartly is I don't want to be the first thing that I want to hear them to hear some jokes,
right?
But it's the whole thing was there were a bunch of CEOs and stuff from Japan at this thing that if they spoke English, they didn't speak English well enough to catch the nuances of comedy.
Right.
You know, they're just staring at him, or they just thought he wasn't funny. It didn't translate, you know, his story of that gig being pretty brutal. But again, it also paid ridiculously well too. So.
Yeah. I think as you get more opportunities like that, not that they're falling off a tree or anything, but you realize there's a reason it's paying you so much, because the level of difficulty to stick that landing is a 10, They need a professional that can come in and like navigate really ridiculous situations. Like maybe half the crowd doesn't speak English. Mm-hmm. Maybe half the crowd didn't know comedy was happening.
Right.
Maybe everyone's afraid to laugh because of the boss.
Their boss is right there.
Yeah.
You're in like some giant, huge, you know, like a arena that's been set up with like 12 person round tables.
Yeah.
You know, to look like a, you know, a bad after prom or whatever, you know.
Right.
So yeah, there's all kinds of difficulty things that you have to kind of overcome for those gigs. And I would love to welcome those challenges. I mean, put that out in the universe. I would love to. Get that money, son. I don't care how hard the show is. I'll do it. You know,
Toyota, call us. Kia.
We're available. Give us another chance. You know, like,
yeah, we'll do a Subaru. I don't care. Like,
yeah, yes. I don't, you know, I don't care. Yeah, we'll do.
Bring back El Camino.
Yes. That would be perfect for us. You know,
I would definitely love to take that opportunity from someone more deserving.
Yeah. What are you talking about? You think I'm not deserving? What are you talking about?
The El Camino humor.
Yeah. So I've alluded to it a few times, but I'll go ahead and talk about where I was last weekend. We'll do the recap and we'll talk about what's coming up. We have a great question of the week this week sent in from Scott Curtis. So I do want to spend some time on that. But yeah, this last weekend I was in Rochester, Minnesota at Goonies Comedy Club, and two really great shows. I really like Mark, the owner of that club, and his dedication to keeping it going, right? This is the third location. He's got a good sense of humor about it, because like, as I was saying, after he handed me my check, I was like, all right, I can't wait to see the new location next year. And he goes, I know, right? You know, they were in downtown Rochester for a long time, and then I guess the property taxes and things just got way too expensive to be in downtown Rochester, so then he moved. Was in the back room of this restaurant, and then the restaurant actually moved after COVID and brought him with them. So that's good that he's still got this relationship with them. Mm-hmm. And the new setup's dope, man. Have you done it? It's in the hotel. You've done this one, right?
I've done it. Yeah, the setup is great. The location, it sucks if you like doing stuff outside of the hotel.
I had a car. I could
that helps
drive to things. Did you not have a car? You had a car.
No, I was with Brent.
Oh, okay.
Took me in the middle.
Yeah,
and I didn't want to wake up.
Sleeps all day.
I know. I guess I'll just walk around Rochester.
Yeah, could have walked across the street to Flap Doodles, their ice cream place that I never got to check out. I wanted to, but it closed early.
I was like,
I'll go get some Flap Doodles. Come on.
Every restaurant or place to eat in that area is named something crazy like that. And
you got a Scooter's Coffee. You got a Scooter's Coffee across the street. You got a Flap Doodles ice cream place down. What else did I see that was like, oh, they got a Pan and Coke, and you had to drive to that.
Okay.
All the years you've done Rochester, have you ever gone to a Pan and Coke?
No, I've only done Rochester once.
Oh, okay. So Pan and Coke, it's this Dutch, it's named after the dish. It's a super dope breakfast joint, and they've got a couple of them in Rochester, and that's the only place I've ever seen them.
Yeah.
I've not seen them anywhere else, but the Pan and Coke and Coke or whatever is like this baked, stuffed, not really a waffle, more like a flapjack or a pancake, but it's like baked. It's dope. It's like a breakfast pie kind of thing.
Okay.
Right. But whenever they bring one out from the kitchen, if you order one, whenever they bring it out from the kitchen, they do this sing-songy thing where like Pan and Coke and Pan and Coke and Pan and Coke and until they get to your table. So if you're sitting in the far side, or someone sitting in the far side of the restaurant, they have to do this sing-songy thing.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. The Dutch are weird, basically.
I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining me hungover because I spent the night in Rochester, and then I go to this breakfast place and it's just like this weird chanting.
Yeah.
It's like
Pan and Coken.
Pan and Coken.
Yeah.
Pan and Coken. Pan and Coken.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I like that you're taking it like very midsummer. I like that you're chanting and white people everywhere.
Are they in like
real nervous?
Are they dressed like old
school
Dutch?
They're just dressed like regular. The one I went to is kind of like an upscale bistro vibe to it. Like they used to be like a little bit more like, oh, this is clearly like an old timey family restaurant that's been around forever. But this new location, it was very like kind of chic looking, but they still did that. It was anyway, shout out to Pan and Coken. It was good. It's good breakfast.
Did you have a Pan and Coken?
No, I've never had one. Because I'm more of a savory guy, not like a sweet, but they look good. I've seen them. I've seen them go by my table as my attention was drawn to it by the server yelling Pan and Coken as they walked by. They look good, you know.
Love it.
Yeah, man. So our Friday night show, we had like 50 people or so, which in that room was good, and they were good audience. And then Saturday, we pretty much were sold out. There were a couple of seats in the very back. And the reason why is because country singer Luke Bryan,
oh God,
was supposed to be doing an outdoor concert that day, like right outside of Rochester, and it rained all day, and so they canceled his concert at like 4 or 5 in the afternoon, they called it. And all these people had driven into Rochester to go to the concert. They had bought hotel rooms, gotten babysitters for their kids, the whole shit. So looking for things to do, a bunch of Luke Bryan fans came to my comedy show.
Oh my God. This is one. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I hope you got the Luke Bryan bonus.
I did have that bump. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know who this person is, but I just threw him into Google, and the first song that comes up, I guess I got Hurtin', Fishin', and Lovin'. So that was in your room. And then we got Knockin' Boots.
Oh, see, that's more like that's up your alley, right?
Yeah, I've been knocking boots once or twice. Mm-hmm. But I got a beer in my hand.
Mm-hmm. Which you were knocking boots, but you had a beer in your hand.
But I got a beer. I'm definitely playing that one as soon as this podcast is over. Why did
we like
always
to talk about music as much as we can on this podcast? So there we go. I purposely did not Google Luke Bryan because in the back of my head is like, if I find out that that's the try that in a small town guy, which I don't think it is. I think that's somebody else. But yeah. I was like, if it's him, I'm going to say something about it on stage. I know I'm going to say something. So I was like, he's a country singer. That's all I need to know. But I turned around and had fun with it. And I talked about it on stage. I asked, like, you know, like there was a real cowboy looking dude up front. And I was like, were you going to go to the Luke Bryan concert? He's like, yeah. And I was like, oh, and, you know, thanks for coming and checking this out instead. I'm sorry. Maybe you could see him again. And then I just asked the audience by round of applause how many people were going to go to the Luke Bryan concert. And it was about half the crowd.
Damn.
And so at the end of the show, when I was doing my merch pitch, and I'm showing the t-shirt, I was like, look, you guys were all going to a concert. You're all going to buy a concert shirt.
Yeah.
I've got a Sharpie. If you buy my shirt, I'll cross my name out and write Luke Bryan on the shirt.
That's hilarious.
And Dwight, it worked.
Did it really?
It worked. I sold a bunch of shirts. For me, a bunch of shirts.
Yeah.
And the first person had me do it. And then people had me just write other random shit. And it brought out, like, there were a bunch of people who came up and bought merch for me or like, we don't give a fuck about Luke Bryan. We came to see you. We came to see a comedy show and to see you. Great show.
Oh,
you
awesome.
Know, and we'll take, I was like, do you want me to write something on it? Like, yeah, write fuck Luke Bryan on. And then one guy's like, cross your name out and then write your name again. It's like, all right.
I'll do it. Yeah. I love that. I love country music fans because these people buy the most merch they are the people keeping the merch economy going. Like,
and the most beer. I'm sure that the bar did great that night.
Yep.
You know? Yeah. And so, yeah, it was good, man. And like, you know, I still did like the interracial stuff and I, you know, still did, you know, I just did my stuff. I didn't like shy away from it. And so, and they were actually really good. Both audiences were really good. And it just reminds me of a thing generally that Minnesota, Wisconsin, those crowds are almost always like a step above. They're just like happy to see comedy for whatever reason, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was a great weekend. And then also during the day, this is going to be some shitty uncle stuff, but I'll say it. So my sister Kelly was going to come down from St. Cloud and bring the kids and bring her husband John. And it was like, okay, I'm prepared for this. This is going to be dope. But it's also like, it's going to be my entire day on Saturday before the show. My niece and nephew are a lot. They're at an age where they're super high energy and they're a lot to be around.
So
7 and 10.
Okay.
And so so I was like, I'm gonna be exhausted for the Saturday night show. I'm not gonna be able to get a nap in. I just was preparing for it. But Kelly and Jean invited a couple that they're friends with to come down too, who also have three kids. And that combination of trying to orchestrate two families, five kids, meant they actually didn't get down to Rochester till like 4 o'clock.
Oh wow.
And I was like, this is dope. I just 2 hours, like get my hang time and everything. And then I get ready for the show. And it was dope. But where the hang time happened was they got a hotel that had like one of those, like not a full on water park, but basically a baby water park in the middle of it.
That's a long 2 hours.
Yeah. So it was 2 hours of me catching up with Kelly and Sean sitting on beach chairs in a massively crowded So it wasn't, you know, we're just watching my niece and nephew run around and swim and go down the water slide and have fun or whatever, which is good because that kind of like kept them busy.
Right.
You know? But it was also, oh, and there's also another 100 kids in here running around screaming.
Yeah.
So it was like,
yeah,
that's what I get for being a bad uncle and like being like, oh, I have a chill day. I've read all day. I go to Panakukin on my own. It's like a dope day, relaxed. And it's like, no, we're still going to give it to you. It's just going to be super compacted, like super dense.
Yeah.
Hang. So
yeah, that is, that's too much for your boy, even though I did something similar this weekend, but with visiting my buddy in, he lives in Maryland, basically DC area, but he just had his second kid. So it was his daughter's second birthday. So we went to a birthday party at a brewery like you do. I was just thinking because we went to this brewery and it was just all children and their parents. I was like, my parents never had anything like this.
Yeah. It used to be frowned upon. I mean, my, you know, when my parents were still together, you know, my dad was a biker and he would occasionally take me to a biker's bar and there weren't other children there. It's like, you know, it was like him and all his biker buddies getting day drunk. And then he'd give me a handful of quarters to go play the pool table. Like, hey, go fuck up that pool table because you're barely tall enough to reach over the top of it. You know, like, let's put some gouges in that felt over there, you know?
Yep. You're just covered in pool chalk for some reason.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, this trend now of the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, we're taking your baby to the bar and to the brewery. I don't know why the brewery seems different to people.
I don't know.
Because either way, it's like, well, either A, you're taking your baby to a bar or you're taking your baby to a factory. And neither one of them seems appropriate.
it's both of those things.
It's both of those things, you know.
And there's like a Papa Shot and there's skee ball, but none of the kids, they're two. They're like two and three. None of them are old enough to play, but, you know, if you don't let them play, then what are you going to do?
Then they get mad, yeah.
Yeah, so they're literally, their kids just, you know how hard a skee ball is? They're like tossing these things.
Yeah.
Thank God they don't have like the arm strength to actually
to really
fuck somebody
you.
Up. Yeah. But
yeah, I just thought it was funny. The water park hotel staycation thing, I totally got it now. And like Kelly's friend Liz came with her to the show. The dad stayed at the hotel with the kids, ordered pizza, but Kelly and Liz came to the show. And Liz was just talking about it. She's, you know, I got three boys. And she's like, yeah, this is why you pay, oh, it's $20 more for this hotel per night. Like, and like, we just let the boys like run themselves exhausted in the water park. Like, like it's totally worth the $20 or whatever it is, you know?
Genius.
Yeah, absolutely genius. And that's, you know, so hopefully next time that Brent takes you on the road, he'll put you guys in one of those hotels so you can have something to do during the day. You can,
that's,
Dwight
be very
can get out there on the water slide, wear himself out, tucker himself out.
You know me and water slides. I have a well-documented history of anytime one's in my vicinity.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say you got name dropped on the Jackie and Lori show.
Oh, I did have I had breakfast. I got in early enough that I had breakfast with Jackie Cation and Anna Valenzuela and Jackie's buddy Brian, who I don't remember his last name, but I'd met for the first time in LA comic. We had a lovely little brunch. It was very nice. Yeah,
that's nice. Yeah. Jackie never says your last name. I think she's talked about you on the podcast before, maybe once or twice. It's always Matt Alano.
she said that at the breakfast too, and I didn't correct her. I realized that she actually introduced me that way, and I'm like, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever. She's getting most of it. It's okay.
She gets 66% there. She can't get over the hump.
She's making up for all the people who just call me Matt Martin, like, which are people that knew me before I got married. And it's like, it's Alano.
Sure.
It's like, you know. Sure. Yeah, it has been changed now. You
can get there.
Yeah.
That sounds like a dope weekend, man.
It was very good. Yeah, it was a very good weekend. And shout out to Mark and Goonies. It's a great club. Wherever it lays its head, it's a great club.
This always, I feel like this always happens to you with like the Matt Rife thing, the canceled country concert. Like you just end up being in front of audiences that you would never want to be in front of. And then it ends up going well.
I know, and that's why I'm putting it out there for this Toyota gig. You had a big trip this weekend. You went all the way to Baltimore.
I went to Baltimore to, so like I said, I visited my friend, lives in Maryland, and we bought tickets for the National Football League, Indianapolis Colts versus the Baltimore Ravens. We bought those like months ago. So got to go out there and visit my bud, and we drove to Baltimore to watch the Colts game. But I did book some spots, and that's exactly what they were. They were just like just random spots. You know, you're in your own region and you get the treatment. Like, you throw this guy a couple extra minutes. He drove a long way or came a long way, or maybe give him a good spot. Nope. This is the East Coast, son. It's not how we do things out here. It's just like a lot of East Coast shows or even clubs or showcase clubs and shows are just like super congested. Like, they try to fit as many comics on as possible. So I did a couple spots. 10 minutes went quick, both shows. So
I'm surprised you got 10 minutes, honestly. Like, I feel like sometimes when you come in from out of town, they don't know who you are on the East Coast. It's like, yeah, we'll give you five. You're like, you know.
Yeah, it's it's funny too, because you do the same type of booking ask that you would do at a club to some random showcase producer.
Here's all my credits. Yeah. Here's all the shit that I've done. And you're like, can I please get 10 minutes?
They're like, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Which I like the showcase style. I think a lot of independent producers around the country are kind of falling into the laziness or maybe the trap of what clubs are doing, which is just booking these social media names that aren't necessarily great. I get why you do that. Large audience equals large social media presence equals larger audiences, but it doesn't always translate. So you're not really doing the job of booking the show if you're just like a comic has 100,000 more followers than B comic, you know what I mean? So you're seeing that in people's credits, the way that they get brought to the stage now, which is a fun change. This next comic has 150,000 views on TikTok. Like, cool, man. I guess I don't know, but that now I feel like I'm the old guy.
Yeah.
Like, how dare you? How dare you bring up your social media presence, this thing that I struggle with on a daily basis?
No, I'm with you. Like, and I've thought about it, like, as I'm in trying to book Don't Tells for the fall for Bloomington. I'm trying to ramp that back up to doing once a month. And I have it, you know, and I'm, to my credit, I book it a little bit different than a lot of people, where it's like, you know, it's Brad Wenzel and it's like, you know, people that have got real credits. And it's so, like, even though this, I can't market that, you know, I can say, you saw them on MTV, you saw them on this, you saw them, you know, like the secret headliner's done all this shit. But I've also, as you know, there's not always somebody routing through that I can grab who can do that.
Right.
You know, and I've already used basically the Midwest local. I've used Brent, you know, and stuff like that, who kind of makes sense to put into that spot. So there's been part of me that's like, oh, that person has like a million views. I could use that as like a million views on TikTok. All right, maybe that's enough, you know, to sell it, you know. And certainly that's, you know, still like a step above what some Don't Tell producers are doing, where they're basically doing local showcases and they're just counting on the brand to be enough. And, you know, to be fair, if your local showcase is good enough and everyone does well, particularly the headliner, then people in the crowd don't give a shit. I don't think if you gave them a good time, you know, and they feel like they got their money's worth, then it's fine, you know?
Yeah, so, like, the nuanced stuff that I care about, the audience doesn't care about. Like, the audience has never cared about how you get brought on stage. Like, they never care about your credits. Like, they never care about the bio to the link that you think that, you know, the amount of energy that people put into these things is like, you know, I'm doing a BrewTube next month, and the Eventbrite is like, do you want AI to write this event for you? And I was like, maybe. That does sound faster, but it's just laziness, and it's really just pulling buzzwords to try to like grab people's attention anyway.
Right. So speaking of Eventbrite, I saw Wayne Mehmet, friend of the podcast, post that apparently Eventbrite's going to start charging $25 to post an event.
They certainly are. They've been on some.
You're going to stick with it, or are you going to look for an alternative ticketing system?
Well, now they have. Now they have a lot of people. Yeah,
they have
Yeah, because like every time I sell a ticket on Eventbrite, I get that person's email.
Okay.
It's not.
So there is a value to it that you, so it's $25 just to post an event, and then they're still getting their ticket processing fee as well, right?
Yes. Yes. So,
yeah. So they're double dipping.
Well, I mean, they're double dipping from the customer.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I guess single dipping. No, they're dipping on both sides now, I guess.
Right. Right. Yeah, because you pass the ticket fees on to the customer.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Or you can eat the fees if you don't want to pay your talent, basically. Like, yeah, if you don't want to have enough money to pay your talent, then.
Yeah. I think reasonable ticket, nobody likes ticket fees, but reasonable ticket fees, it's just a normal thing that everybody's used to. Now, when it gets like the crazy shit that happens on Ticketmaster with their surge ticketing.
It's insane.
That they use AI for.
Yeah.
So then it's too much. But if it's just like, it was a $2, $3 ticket fee, we're all like, okay, that's just kind of the price of doing anything these days to going to events.
I was playing around with another website before publishing the event
LinkedIn?
On Eventbrite.
Was it LinkedIn? You were trying to promote LinkedIn?
I was playing around. always use LinkedIn, baby. And it was just garbage.
Yeah.
And I was like, and so now
it's just worth it to use.
I don't know. Like, if you're new to running events and like selling tickets, maybe it's worth like doing the start from scratch thing. But I have this built in, because I run my shows in the same place, in the same cities. It's like I've been running the Chicago show.
Yeah.
All I have to do is duplicate. Mm-hmm. And it just, it does have like the best relationship with Google, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't like Ticketmaster, like you said.
Yeah.
So if people are like, oh, things to do in Cincinnati where Wayne lives, mm-hmm. there's a good chance it pops up for them. And then it's just like one click to figure it out. But yeah, it sucks because like if you're running small scale shows, every dollar counts. Like that $25 a month, and that's just the starting thing, that counts. I mean, that comes out of your pocket more than likely.
Yeah, no shit. Hopefully that's something that you as producer and all the independent producers can just absorb and roll with. And I'm going to sneeze. All right, there it is.
He's allergic to this Eventbrite double dip to these bullshit. Fees. This was bullshit. We're talking fees.
I'm sending you a message here in the chat though for something we need to discuss off air. Again, for the Patreon, if we ever launch it, if we do launch a Patreon, we're gonna have to go back and listen to our old episodes and go, oh shit, we gotta talk about that. Okay, now we gotta,
oh man,
which at that point, like, never... it'll be old news and nobody will care. So it should be fine, right?
Yeah, it'll be good. I don't know, man.
Yeah. So that is important that we talk about that, because it is going to be a big thing that we see play out. But you're doing these spots, you go to the Colts game. Now, the Colts, infamously mm-hmm. left Baltimore in the middle of the night with a bunch of moving trucks. Were their fans just, the Baltimore crowd just extra shitty to anyone wearing Indianapolis Colts gear?
No, not at all. I mean, it didn't happen like yesterday, Matt.
Sometimes people, this is no shit. One time when I was still tour managing bands, I had a day off. I was somewhere in Florida, like, I don't know, somewhere in Florida. I don't think it was Key West, but it was like Southern Florida, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm just at a bar drinking, and I was still following the Colts back then. And I'm watching it on the game, and there's this old grizzled dude sitting at the bar, and we start chatting, whatever. And this could have been bullshit, but he didn't play it up like it was. He wasn't trying to sell me on it. But apparently, he said he was on that team.
Oh,
that left in the middle of the night. And he was like, I wasn't a starter. He was like, I was a second stringer, but I was on that team. And it was crazy. And he was talking about like the players got notified that day of.
Jeez.
Like the day of, like, yeah, we're leaving at midnight tonight.
That's what it was. You know? Yeah.
And so, and he talked about like he then, like, he felt so shitty about it and whatever, but he's like, you know, what am I going to do? Like, that's where my contract is. And then the next year he got like injured a little bit, but he really played it up and just retired.
Nice.
It's like, I don't know if I want to work for this organization, really. And so he just milked his injury and then got out. And then he's like, I forget what he told me, he's dead for a living, but he's like, I was pretty much done with football after that. It's like,
Yeah. I probably, so the Colts are supposed to lose this game by a lot. And maybe that's why everybody was so like cool in our section.
Yeah,
it was just me and my friend. But there were a lot of Colts jerseys. I was kind of surprised, but yeah, it was like no vitriol. Like we waited in line for cheesesteaks, and we were just like, the Colts were winning at the time. We're like, isn't it gonna be funny when Baltimore comes back and wins? Like we weren't like, I wasn't being shitty because like for what reason? And then the Colts ended up winning. And I think it was more anger at everybody on the Baltimore sideline than like Colts fans. But like, yeah, man, I've done shows in Baltimore, but I think I did a show at like a house. I've never gone out and explored Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. You never done? Is McGoobies? Is that the club in Baltimore?
McGoobies, that does sound familiar.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of the long running, like, you know, legendary club has been there forever. Yeah.
But a lot of these comics can just like, you can go to DC, which is like 35 minutes away, or go to Virginia or Maryland. Like all those cities have clubs that they can bounce around to, which is really cool. But it was supposed to be like a torrential downpour. The weather held out for us and it was nice.
That's good.
A lot of baby time, a lot of Uncle Dwight. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you do airplane? You do it once and then they're like again.
Yeah.
And again, and then you don't realize they're not getting worn out.
You have to drop them and then they stop asking you to do airplane. You drop them once, you know. Like not on the coffee table. Nothing that's going to like leave a mark.
But get just specific. Enough that
they, yeah.
Yeah, this is a 9/11 cosplay. Oh, man. Ask your dad about it later.
Yeah,
it's fitting, but yeah, the shows weren't. Yeah, I didn't have like great shows or like.
Mm-hmm.
I would go back if I had more of a lead time or if I got connected with better people that could, because I know. So we're at the brewery for the 2-year-old birthday. Pretty big. It is warehousey, and I come out of the bathroom and see a goddamn stand-up comedy flyer, and I'm like, God, can we not?
Yeah.
We touch every goddamn thing.
Yeah. You know what's good in comedy is 500-foot ceilings and concrete floors and a bunch of a cacophony of other people like not that far away from you that have nothing to do with the comedy show. You know, that's always the best.
What's funny is that for my brewery show, I'd let AI write it, and that's exactly what they said.
Oh wow. Okay.
That's how they described it.
I guess this is time to
you know
tell
what's
you
good for comedy.
I'm actually a robot, Dwight. I'm sorry that you had to learn this way. When my it lines up perfectly with AI, all my opinions.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh man. So what do you got coming up? That was the last weekend. What do you got coming up on the radar?
Like I said, this is kind of a vacation. This last week, so it was nice to be back. My flight was delayed, and don't fly American Airlines. So September 28th, that's Thursday, I am back home in Indianapolis at Let's Fest. I'm hosting the kickoff show at the White Rabbit. Starts at 7 p.m., so they have shows going on all weekend. Check out Let's Fest Comedy, or Let's Comedy Festival.
Google it, you'll find it.
Just throw those three words together in a Google search and you'll find it. But yeah, definitely check that out if you're in Indianapolis. And the next night, the 29th, that's my Kurt Vonnegut gala. I'm very excited, been working on that set, very excited about that one. And then Saturday, September 30th, I am at the Story Inn in Nashville, Indiana, filling in for legend to me, Stuart Huff, who decided to be a good dad and hang out with his son. So I'll be filling in.
So his son's birthday, is he taking him to a brewery? Is that what's happening?
Knowing Stuart, he's probably taking him to like an airplane museum or something. haunted train museum.
Well, I know that like his son used to love Mexican restaurants. He would talk about like when he was younger, that was like his son's jam because all the colors, right? It's so colorful and everything. So maybe he still has a love for Mexican restaurants. So maybe that's what they're doing.
Yeah, Who knows with him? Yeah. But yeah, those are great shows coming up. Come to that, Nashville, Indiana, if you're near there. I don't know why you would be, but We'll be filling in for Stewart. I will try to be as philosophically whimsical as possible to do a good job. So fun shows coming up this week. What about you, my dude?
This week I was supposed to have off, but I am going to be hosting at the Comedy Attic. They've had some last minute switcheroos. I'm still going to be Sabrina Wu headlining, but I'm going to step in and host so that Erin Depke can have her first feature weekend. Erin is supposed to host, and then Jared is asking me for ideas about features and through the conversation. And it was his idea. He was like, maybe I'll just let Erin be, and she's ready. You know, she can definitely do that amount of time, and
that's
she's
great.
Crushing it. So that's very exciting. So I'm excited to, be there for that. So shout out to Erin.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. And
I wish we had like a applause drop.
Yeah.
Whenever we're proud of someone, like we do is talk shit about.
No, we don't. We give a lot of flowers.
All we do on this show is talk shit, and
we
then
would be so much more popular if all we did was talk shit. You know what? Let's do this. We joked around about this, but let's really make a weekly segment called This Motherfucker.
Yeah,
it's going to be in a positive way. So this week's This Motherfucker is Erin Depke. This Motherfucker. Getting her first feature weekend. Look at her. Look at her getting that.
Look
first
at this
feature.
Motherfucker getting
this
her.
Motherfucker bumping me down to host.
This motherfucker passing Matt.
Yeah. Yeah. Leapfrog me. It's
leapfrog.
Fine.
Leapfrog.
But yeah. So it's one of those things that, I just kind of fell in since I was going to be home. It's nice to stay loose because then on Sunday, so I'll be there at the Attic on Friday and Saturday this weekend, which will be, I know you were all professional, give the dates. The 29th and 30th, I'll be at the Attic. And then on October 1st, I'm going to be at the Roast Battle, Roast Mania, or whatever, at Louisville Comedy Club. And I had to do some opposition research.
Okay.
I was watching clips of the guy who I'm going up against, who I've never met. I've never met this person. I've heard their name, but that's about it. And so I was just watching their clips to get ideas about things that they talk about, you know, that I can maybe start writing. So I've jotted down a couple ideas, but it is weird. It's a different muscle. I've been watching a bunch of clips of Comedy Central roasts to kind of get that like rhythm and that idea of like, because there's a lot of really basic roast structures out there. And I was like, I don't mind being a hack at the roast.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to do someone else's roast joke and just apply it to him. I'm going to write my own shit. But the basic idea and the setup and structures of it, I'll give it a whirl, you know, like, but that did lead me to something. If I can move off of the dates real quick. Did you see the comedy drama about Jimmy Carr?
No. Is there new stuff about Jimmy Carr?
So basically, and who knows, because the cyclical nature of social media, where people discover and they dredge something up that was like a couple of years ago.
He's just a conservative, crazy person now, right?
He's on that. You can't say nothing. You can't say anything anymore. And so, I'm Googling to see if it was okay. So yeah. So it was in 2021, in 2021, he had a Netflix special, called His Dark Material. And it was in that he predicted how you won't be able to say anything in 10 years. You won't be able to say anything. Right.
Yeah.
Well, for some reason, this has gotten new life on social media. I don't know why. And so, and then people are like putting their responses to these jokes. And the thing is, I will say that Jimmy Carr has had some jokes over the years that I think are really, really strong, solid jokes. Like he clearly knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He definitely fills that role of like an asshole comic, and that can be effective. Right.
Right.
But yeah, the things that people are posting now, dredging up 2 years later and posting, it is a lot of like old man shit of like, you can't say nothing anymore and pronouns are dumb and all that kind of, and it's like, dude,
jeez,
like, fucking like, do you not understand how hacked this is?
Yeah.
That you and every other Rob Schneider out there
was so
doing it, you know,
was recent? This is just like something.
And he just does a bunch of jokes that he says, you know, are too far, and like, you know, you can never be able to do these jokes. And he does like a 9/11 joke that is like the most,
oh man,
dumb, toothless. It's just you know, it's just like, that's not even that hardcore as a 9/11 joke.
Yeah.
Like, it's a pretty dumb, soft. And so it's just this thing where presenting himself as like this badass, like truth teller. But even for 2021, I mean, even back then,
if you want a good 9/11 joke, rewind the podcast 10 minutes. when I'm flying my little niece exactly. around.
Yeah, yeah, that's a solid.
That's a original. Solid. Yeah, suck it, Jimmy Carr.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's just a hack old man. Yeah. And
I think he started posting, maybe his channel started posting clips from this Netflix special. That's probably the origin of it.
Right.
Is they started posting it and posting it like, you know, you'll never be able to say this, cancel culture or whatever. And then people are just like watching it and commenting like how dumb it is. It's just super hacky. It did remind me though, he's been on a lot of those Comedy Central roasts. And one of my favorite jokes, actually is not one of his jokes, but I think it was Nikki Glaser who had this joke. She was like, Jimmy A. Carr is what Ralph Macchio has to do to find a place to sleep at night. Such hilarious. A perfect misdirection.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. As I was like, that's a great joke, right?
That's there, you know? Really funny.
Yeah.
You think that's a Tom Takar right there? He used to write for her.
Back in the day when when like it would have been about that time. Yeah, that's for sure.
Very funny.
But anyway, so it's manufactured drama. He's trying to whip up some career boosting outrage from the internet.
It works. Like all these songs that people are putting out that are trash shoot up. You saying one?
Rich Man from Richmond, North of Richmond, isn't a quality song?
Rich Man, North of Richmond. I didn't listen to any of them.
Poor Man, South of Port.
Middle Class Man from the Marisgata, Maine.
Oh man. All right, so those are our upcoming dates and a little sidetrack there too. I don't think I have anything else that I necessarily really need to talk about. Got a couple one-nighters in your favorite place, Michigan, coming up next month, but we can talk about that when we get closer to it. We do have a great question of the week this week that I want to get to and make sure we spend enough time on. This comes from Scott Curtis. We've talked about on the podcast before. You and I have been guests on his late great podcast Behind the Bits, which he has retired, but Scott has written in, and this is how it goes. It goes, hey guys, it's me, Scott Curtis, former host of Behind the Bits and soon to be host of Pod Around and Find Out, which is exciting news. I didn't know that he was launching a new podcast, and it sounds like it's the podcast equivalent of Cheaters. Like he's just gonna be like, they potted around and then they found out. He's just the audio of him like kicking in the door of a cheap motel.
Pod Around and Find Out, but it's still comedy related.
I don't know. We don't know. Yeah.
I'll have to pod around and find out.
I guess we're going to have to all pod around and find out with pod around and find out to find out what the podding arounding is about. So Scott says, as you probably know, I listen to every episode. Thank you very much, Scott. And tell all my comic friends that they would be complete idiots not to listen to your show. Neg them. Use that neg.
Yeah.
Like this is tactics that we saw in The Game. Neil Strauss. The question. I'm starting to change the tone of my act to include some heavier material, depression, social issues, my dumb generation, etc. The problem is that some of the jokes land, but they don't really fit into some of my more accessible and silly stuff. Have you gone through a change of perspective, and how did you make it work for you?
Well, yeah, I'll jump in here. I've gone through a change of perspective, and when it starts working in my act, I will let you know, Scott, personally, when I figure this one out. I don't know. I think that it's important to not keep things finite, not keep yourself like locked in a box. I always think about like Richard Pryor or George Carlin kind of having this like reinvention of themselves. Mm-hmm. And I don't think what I've experienced is that extreme. I've always talked about my own life in a way that's in relation to the world. And a lot of the time that's talking about race and politics and how they affect me directly. But I think the way that I try to keep it a little bit silly with building tension is just, this is a rep thing. It's very uncomfortable where you're like repping the joke and you're like, okay, maybe I'm just hitting them with like all crosses and not like jabbing enough. That's a boxing metaphor, Matt. I'm not like jabbing enough.
Thank you. I thought it was cross stitch. Okay, go ahead.
It's very popular. I don't know. I think with the flow of like, all right, now I'm going to go silly. And now I'm going to get a little bit serious. It's a tough nuance because it's very powerful to like just have a right turn, something you talked about earlier, like just, oh, we didn't see that coming at all, and then get into it. But it's also probably more effective to have well thought out transitions.
I think that's
not something that I would normally say, like, focus on in building your entire set. But like, if you're going to like make a big jump in tone and a big jump in your pacing, transitions start to matter way, way more.
Yeah, I agree, because you have to, like, when you're making that big of a change up, you have to kind of give them some notice. You have to give like the warning sign, you know, because otherwise it's going to take them more time to adjust and realize what's going on than you want them to take, you know. I think the examples you gave of Pryor and Carlin are two of the most famous, but it's also, those are pretty extreme changes where they both like went away for a while, quit doing comedy, and then came back with completely different acts and personas. For most of us, it's not like that. Most of us don't, when we make a shift of perspective, it is more of a gradual thing. It's like, you know, maybe I can start talking about some heavier stuff. A lot of this comes with your skill level as a comedian, you know, like, you know, one of my records ends with me telling the story about reconnecting with my strange father, and then almost immediately he gets ALS, and then that whole thing, right? And then it turns into a 9/11 joke. And so
when in doubt,
you know, I had that story that happened before I ever started doing comedy. And so I knew that story the entire time I'd been doing comedy, but I also knew that even though there's this very big funny thing, that true thing that happened, I always knew that that was funny, but I also knew I was not a good enough comic yet to make it work. And even when I started working on it, it was a process. You were talking about the difficulty of the reps. And I feel like this is where Scott is with it from the sound of his letter. It's like, yeah, it's going to be rough, particularly when you were trying to work that heavier material in a shorter set, 5 minute, 10 minute open mic, you know, or guest spot thing. If you have 20 to 30 minutes of doing very well with silly or like not that challenging material and the crowd likes you, they're going to go with you for the most part. When you go darker, more political, like more personal, whatever, when you are just like, that's maybe the first or second thing out of your mouth, that's a higher difficulty level, but it's also should help you craft the joke that much stronger too, you know?
Yeah.
So you got to take those lumps and you got to really think about the nuance, the pacing of it. You know, the thing with my dad is I learned pretty quickly I needed to put some more laugh lines in early on, so it wasn't just heavy, big laugh. I had to, like, in the first part of it, as I'm establishing the reconnecting our relationship after being estranged for, you know, most of my life, I had to find a way to put some laughs in there because that was already kind of like dark enough and I hadn't even gotten to the ALS shit yet. And so that was a process, and I just learned it from doing it in short sets, or, you know, because like I couldn't tank my headlining show with this bit.
Yeah,
you know, I had to work it out in the gym, you know, before I could put it into the act. So it's just, I don't think it necessarily means you have to abandon silly either. Like, we're well-rounded individuals, you know, most people have those sides, you know. So my take on it is it's just difficult, and you're gonna have to like kind of battle through it. And these are going to be jokes that really are going to hinge, like you said, on the transitions, the timing, how much you can really push your actual energy into it. Confidence is a big one.
Yeah.
Like, if they feel like you're faltering, particularly if you're doing political stuff or whatever, like, you got to just kind of own your perspective. You got to own the story. You got to let them know it's going to be okay. I've been kind of doing this with the stuff about my mom's passing that I've been talking about, you know, as I've been, and I did it the Saturday show. I didn't do it the Friday show, but I did the Saturday show at the club, you know, and I ended on this chunk about my mom. But I'm still like kind of letting them off the hook a little bit by talking about, like, I talk about, you know, my mom passed away, you know, and I'm going to talk about it. But before I talk about this, you need to know that she loved, I did stand up. Like, I make this little, this is going to be okay.
Right.
It's going to be okay for all of this. You know, she loved what I did stand up. She particularly loved it when I talked about her. I had stories about her, you know, over the years. And so I just want to tell you this. So I do this, I'd like to eventually get away from that, where I don't do that. I just go into the first joke.
Right.
Which is a very quick flip around, which I found out Derek Sheen has almost the exact same joke. He's talking about his mom passing away too. And I just messaged him. I was like, we have almost the exact same joke the way we get into it.
Right.
And he's like, I was like, but I think we should both keep it. He's like, yeah, I don't give a shit. It's like,
yeah,
because we immediately then depart and go in different directions, but we have the same sort of way in. And actually we've talked about doing a themed tour together. The motherless child tour.
That's...
but
I
am making this like this little safety zone for the jokes now until I know that I can just come out and boom, hit it.
Yeah.
So my advice to you, Scott, is you got to just keep working it, but this is material that you really have to commit to. Silly material, you can kind of just throw it out there, and if it hits, it doesn't, you know, it's okay because it's light and airy. But anything that is challenging to the audience, either challenging their political views or, you know, I thought this was a comedy show, why is he talking about his dead parents?
Yeah,
you know, things like that, you have to really kind of just own it. And, you know, as always, make sure the joke comes first. You know,
big step there, like making sure the joke comes first. Like it's tough because I think when you keep things personal, it's easier to be more comfortable with the tension.
Exactly.
Versus like a guy just up there with political opinions,
right.
Which I like that style of comedy as well. But I think how comfortable are you with living in that tension? And be honest, is the payoff worth it?
Yes.
Like consistently enough to keep this in the act. Right. One of the saddest things I've ever seen in comedy is when I first started hosting and a comic was, you know, hanging out in the green room, and he's just like, you know, I wish there's so much stuff going on in the world. I wish I could talk about it, but my audience isn't here to see that. Mm-hmm. They just want my clean David Letterman jokes, like my top 10 lists and stuff like that. And so I always urge people to like try, no matter what level, to be honest in what you want to talk about. Don't let the audience dictate it. Like, you just said, to reiterate this because this is important, you have to make reads on this depending on pay scale and what room you're in.
Yes.
Like, don't be the guy that that goes to a corporate and it's just like, let's get dark, baby.
Yeah.
Hey, Toyota fans.
Yeah, definitely. I think, that kind of material it's going to be crowd specific, you know, because there's also some crowds that it's just not worth it because, like, you know, now again, like depending on what the political stuff is, like, you know, I still did Trump jokes in front of like redneck crowds because he was the president at the time. And I have confidence in the jokes. Like, these jokes are well written enough that, yes, some people are still gonna be pissed off, but there are enough people are gonna be like, oh, it's a joke. And I can give myself flowers a little bit. I know that I did the work in that way because that track off of that album is one of the most played tracks on Sirius XM. And it's mostly played on Larry and Jeff and Larry's Comedy Roundup, which is like the blue collar comedy channel.
Right.
They're playing on my chunk about Trump on there fairly regularly. It's like, all right, I guess I did the work.
Right. That's great.
These are just jokety jokes about this ridiculous human being.
Yep.
You know, so Scott, you're in the painful part of it, but it's a beautiful journey. And because like Dwight said, I think when we talk about ourselves and what we're really going through, it's not only is it more authentic, but it's more rewarding, at least to me personally. That's why I don't write a lot of just made up wordplay jokes for wordplay's sake. You know, everything has like at least some kind of kernel in there. You know, we're not Hasan Minhaj in it out here. You know, this shit is for real.
Oh, Hasan. Yeah. Sorry, I was distracted. Tony came in. It's thunderstorming.
Yes.
He's a scared boy.
That's okay. Yeah, Denise had sent me a picture earlier of Raylan doing the same thing. So it's storming up there in the Bloomington, Indy area. So
yeah.
We should probably wrap this up before you lose your internet.
I know. I was like, it got dark quick.
Yeah.
This fantastic question is one of my favorite things to talk about is like, I know Scott's been doing it for a while, so I think it's just framed differently than a new comic trying to find what they want to talk about for the next few years. Because I think, like, I talked about this a lot. Like, I am still looking to push to the next level, and that's going to take a lot of work, and I find joy in that. Like, that excites me. There's a lot of comics that aren't excited about the writing process or like the artistic part of this. But I still get excited about it. So thank you for that question, Scott. That's awesome. I guess we'll pot around and find out.
We will. I'm very excited. Everybody should check out and we'll let you know when that pod goes live, because I know that you and I will both be listening to it. And so, Scott, make sure that you send us a message so that we know your new podcast is live so we can check it out. If you out there would like to send us a question, we would love to take a stab at it. You can do that at our Gmail account, which is mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight at gmail.com. Thanks again for the great question, Scott. What are we going to end on? What do you got? You got some words of wisdom, some parting passage of comedy gold that you want to let people know?
God, I was looking up Luke Bryan quotes, but I couldn't get it. I couldn't get it quick enough.
Let's go out doing a dramatic reading of Knockin' Boots. lyrics. So I'm doing. We'll train lines.
Yeah. Okay. From the.
Am I going first, or are you going first?
I'll go first. Okay. From the album Born Here, Live Here, Die Here.
That is the most depressing goddamn album title I've ever heard in my life.
That's who you performed for that bought a lot of your shirts. Those people are going to be wearing them in the next in the upcoming Civil War, so I hope you're proud of yourself. From the song Knockin' Boots, this truck needs a half a tank. These wheels need a two lane. This radio needs three songs to play to get me across town to you.
Jesus Christ, how bad is the mileage on this truck? Three songs. So that's 9 minutes, traditional radio songs. That's anywhere from 9 to 12 minutes. A 12 minute drive needs half a tank of gas.
He ain't no libtard in a Toyota Prius. I know that much.
All right. This is the second verse where it gets a little naughty. That dress needs to slip off. That hair needs to come down. Friday nights need to do what Friday nights need to do. That's the truth. What does that mean?
It doesn't sound like he's asking for consent.
No.
Just that it's Friday night and you know what Friday night means.
Yeah.
Yeah, birds need bees and ice needs whiskey. Boys like me need the girls like you to kiss me. Fishing in the dark needs nitty gritty under the pale moon. What, you can't say everything you just said and then end under the pale moon like you're fucking Shakespeare.
He's trying to get those goths, you know, like that last line is just for that 0.00001% crossover fans that are goth, his Luke Bryan fans that have that goth in them. Also, I feel like I need to let you in Nitty Gritty, since it's capitalized. He's probably talking about the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, which is a group that you probably didn't grow up with, but I did.
Oh, no.
All right. And this is the last little stanza before the chorus. Sweet tea needs that sugar stirring. Ooh, metaphor. Ooh. Small town nights need both ends burning. Shades need drawing. Hearts need falling. Boots need knocking.
Knocking boots. Me and you, knocking
like
boots.
It should be another one there, but it's not. I feel like it should have another one, but it just ends on me and you. All right. Well, that's enough, I think, for the podcast to take us out. I've been Luke Bryan, and with me, as always, is Luke Bryan. Thanks for listening to Luke and Luke. Just my knocking boots.